see explaining our operation and stuff at the state level.
Morning, everybody. I'll call the Public Safety and Corrections Committee meeting, December 7th, order. And Sheriff, seeing that you're the first on my agenda, I'll let you lead us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the United States of America,
Microphones.
Approval of the minutes of the November 2nd meeting.
So move.
Second.
Questions or corrections? All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Aye. Motion carried. Okay, Sheriff, you're up.
There, I think I'm even working here with the microphone. I'll do the bid first before we launch into the reform plan. And we have a bid from Brown and Powers Monuments for the work to be done in the Memorial Park in the amount of $16,000. That was the low bid. We have more than that in the account. So I'd like approval to award that bid to Brown and Powers.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Okay. Yep. So if you push the push button there, they'll be able to
join the meeting.
There you go. So this is Don White, everybody. You met her before when we first started talking about the police reform plan and what was required of us by the governor. Have you all had a chance to look through this? Okay. What we tried to do is break it down into areas that are mandated in the governor's order and then into the areas that were predominant in the feedback. I think it's important before we go any further that the number one part of feedback or the number one comment that we got, especially in the community surveys, was that people want to see their deputies more and they want to see more deputies. Obviously, we don't address that by number in here, but we do with some plans to have better interaction with the public. So throwing that out there for you, that we're not asking for any additional staff, because I know that's obviously an issue. So the first couple pages are on demographics. And then we move, if you go ahead, yep. Let's go right into page 4, where we talk about the opt-ins. So right now we've got every police department in the county opting in with our plan, using our feedback that we received to help them craft their plan, which was the goal from the start, so that we don't lose any municipal funding to any municipality in Steuben County. And I've had a meeting with the DA and we're going to cover his three police officers under our plan so that we're covered there also. This has been a pretty exhaustive process. I would say we probably have close to 300 hours invested in this process. And again, without the help of Corning Incorporated and Dawn in the city working with us, there's no way we would have come up with a plan as detailed as this. I just don't have the resources. So working as a team effort, it worked out very well. So we did several public feedback sessions. If you want to jump in? Okay, yep, next slide, please. Sorry. And if I go too fast, just give a shout. So this is the process we use. And if you look at the documentation from the governor's office on how this is supposed to happen, it's the same process they lay out. We had already begun using this before that direction came from the governor's office. So we were already ahead of the ball when we when you're halfway through with a project, you get your guidance from the governor's office. We did a definition, a measure, an analysis, an improve, and then a control portion of this approach through the timeline, but also through what we did. So we had three public forum feedback sessions, 9 listening sessions with individual special interest groups and marginalized groups. We had how many stakeholder sessions? 5, I believe.
Probably 5.
5 individual stakeholders sessions, which were people that we invited due to their knowledge and expertise in the criminal justice world to be on.
It was the 110 people that mm-hmm. represent those 60 different organizations across the county. But when right. he said stakeholder groups, think of those 110 people.
So we had feedback sessions with all of them. And we also had surveys that went out to just the stakeholders. We had surveys that went out to the general public, which we had around 1,700 responses to. We surveyed every local police officer in the county, and we also surveyed every incoming inmate into the CAP court at the jail for 1 month in the county. And their survey was pretty short and sweet. It was, did the police that arrested you treat you fairly? Did they use the appropriate amount of force? And did you feel that they exhibited any bias against you? That was about 95% positive, which it didn't really surprise me, but it's good to have that data. The only ones that said they were treated with bias were 18 to 24-year-old white males, which I think they misread the question. So
couldn't read the question.
Yeah, well, it was read to them. But so that's where we gathered this data from. We had the city plan went out first, and they've already had their final public comment session, and a few changes were made based on that. That goes to their council the end of this month?
The 14th did it for review, and the vote is the 21st.
Okay. And the plan with ours is we still have to do the public comment section with ours. So this will go to you guys. We'll go over it, finish going over it today. And then we'll have a 2-week public comment section by email on the county website where anybody can tell us whatever they think of it. And we'll take those comments and do the final plan if there's any changes that need to be made based on that. That puts us in full compliance with the governor's executive order. That follows it to a T, which, again, the goal of this, there's 2 goals. We kind of hijacked it. The initial goal was to make sure we didn't lose any municipal funding in Steuben County. We hijacked it to say, how can we use this to better promote what the sheriff's office does out in the community, and also to give people a feeling of partnership better with the sheriff's office. And I think that this achieves that throughout it. So next slide, please. There's all the listening sessions and surveys we talked about. Next slide, please. And next slide, please. So as we go into this, the mandated items, they were listed specifically in the executive order that they had to be addressed. So most of these are things that we already do or have already accomplished. There are changes in law. So there was no real lift with those. As you can see, most of the mandated items are already completed or we're awaiting. The Attorney General's office, if you look at item number 3 on the first one on page 9, the Attorney General's office actually did reach out a week and a half ago. They're beginning to establish their Office of Special Investigations. What that means is any in-custody death, even in the jail, if it's an overdose in the jail, whatever it is, they're going to investigate it. And they're going to remove that from the district attorney and investigate it, whether it's an in-custody death due to a resisting arrest or a non-compliance or even a simple overdose that occurs while they're in custody. The Attorney General's office retains exclusive jurisdiction over those. And that's in law now. So they haven't made the office yet. They're starting to make the office. And we'll see where that goes and what it looks like. We still don't know who we're supposed to communicate with or what we're supposed to provide or any of that. We'll still do our own investigation as we always have, because we're still, especially for anything in the jail, we're still mandated to report, do an investigation, report it to the Commission of Corrections. And apparently the Attorney General's office will also do their own investigation. We'll wait and see how that works out. Hopefully we won't have too many of those. But that's the only one that really is still on hold as we wait for the Attorney General's office to figure out what they're going to do. The chokehold, that's already in effect in our use of force policy, requiring medical response for arrestees, that's already in our policy. The item number six, on the next page, please. Page 10. Item number six is statistics to the Division of Criminal Justice Services. That's requiring the court to provide statistics, but we're required to cooperate with them. So we'll do that. When they're up and ask for it, we'll provide them with whatever they want. Recording of law enforcement activity. Again, that's already policy. If someone's recording us, God bless you, we're recording us too. So 50A, if you go to the next slide, page 11, this one affects Brenda primarily. And this is where they repealed the protection of personnel records from FOIL. Currently now, since this was enacted, anyone from the public, since June 13th of 2020, anyone from the public can FOIL any disciplinary records that we have. It has to be a discipline. It's not a minor violation, a policy violation of counseling. But if we have disciplinary records, they can be FOIL'd as long as they're not either part of an active criminal case or there wasn't treatment associated, mental health treatment associated with it. So those are out there. So far. I'll
interrupt you for a minute. Gary, yep. Did you have a question?
Yeah, I kind of jumped ahead a little bit when I was reading the other night. I'm page 11 talking about education.
Your 11 is different than my 11.
Let's see, where am I here?
He's on the
anyways, first section. To take test.
Equality and social justice. He's on that next page.
Okay.
People that are interested in sheriffs to take civil service test.
Yep.
How are we getting involved with that?
So what we're going to do is we're going to partner with SUNY Alfred and SUNY Corning and provide them with advice on civil service test taking. They're going to create the courses and they're going to do the courses. We're just going to partner with them and assist them in preparing the courses.
So instead of the person being totally liable, mm-hmm. we're going to...
They still got to take the test.
Yeah, but we're going to help them along.
Yep, we are. We are. Right now, we're, because of the atmosphere in New York, and if Mr. Alderman was here, he could speak to it, we're facing a crisis in recruitment for police jobs. We don't have a lot of people taking the test, so.
I can understand that.
Anything that we can do that increases that pool of valid, they still have to have a clean record. They still have to do well enough on the test to get to.
Right.
And this just, I think, proactively helps us increase the number of candidates we have to choose from and proactively helps us take away that stigma of it's only white males that work in policing.
So we talk about helping these people. I'm assuming that's financially also? Mm-mm. No.
No.
So the burden is on them.
Yes. This is just to provide them information and training and some basics on how to take a civil service test. Yep.
And basically it's just like taking nursing classes before correct. You take the nursing exam, except
right.
for it's kind of a course in
yeah.
police work.
When I ran the police academy at CCC, I had a lab every Friday for those that had signed up to be in the academy. And that's all we did was drill down in how to take a civil service test. Because if I got them through phase one of the academy and they couldn't get hired, we're wasting our time. So it's going to be a similar, I would assume, class to that.
And I think that'll really help as far as also with people that have testing problems, the nerve side of it.
Because correct.
The guy that teaches the tractor trailer course at BOCES, he says, mm-hmm. I can make these guys perfect when I'm with them.
Right.
But then the guy giving them their test is a total stranger.
And yeah, they melt down.
They get
yeah.
nervous.
Yeah, and we see that. So the idea is not to give anyone preference, not to give anyone an unfair advantage. It's open to everybody. But make sure that we can increase our pool of candidates so that, and it's not just for us, it benefits everybody in the county. so that we have more people to choose from, with the idea that we're going to have better quality candidates to choose from.
And it's also about partnering with those different organizations to target a broader group. Because a lot of times you hear citizens say, well, I didn't know about it. So what can we do on our end to make sure they know about it? Leverage social media, your website, partner organizations, postings. So
Forever we've had issues filling part-time cooks in the jail. We couldn't get anybody to apply. I put it on Facebook and we instantly had 30 applications. So, I mean, the proof's in the pudding.
Is the course mandatory?
No. Nope. Totally voluntary. And again, they have to sign up through their respective educational, whether it's Alfred or Corning, they have to sign up. They have to be accepted as a student. They have to go through all that to get it. It's not something where we're holding it out at the jail. We will assist them, but we're not running it. It's their courses. Yeah. The social media advertising, as long as we're there, we might as well talk about it. The social media advertisement we will do, we're going to try and reach out to as many groups as we can. A lot of people don't even know when the tests are. And we want to make sure that people know when the tests are so they can sign up and take it. And again, the more people sign up, the more people take it, the better off we're going to be as far as being able to choose from folks. And conduct outreach with faith. The second part of that is conducting outreach with faith-based groups. I went to a round table down in Elmira that Tom Reed held, and we talked to some folks down there that said, you know, our best young men and women are at our churches, and we need somebody to come in that's a police officer that's not in uniform and just sit down and talk to them, counsel them. And say, hey, this is what you're looking at if you're looking at a law enforcement career. It's not what you think. It's not what you've heard. It's not what you see on TV. This is what you're doing in this area. So I'm more than willing to do that. And we plan to start doing that on a regular basis. And again, the more we can get out there that it is a fair and equitable system, I think the better we all are.
And I'll also say the work we've been doing throughout this whole process has been a huge step in us building those relationships with all of the faith-based groups and just other nonprofits, right?
Yes. And it's not to say that we agree every time we get together, because I don't.
True. That's true.
But we find a common ground to talk. And I think that's the start. And again, partner with SUNY to develop a tutoring course. So number three, require implicit bias awareness training. We already do that. We'll continue to do that. What we're going to do is look for better trainings to give to our folks. Right now we get it through PERMA, and there's other avenues out there that we can look at. But a lot of these items in here, we already do. We're just going to expand them. Next page, please. So across, this was a very loud and clear recommendation from the listening sessions, both the stakeholders and the public. People want to see a standardization of how we do personnel complaints in policing across the county. So if I walk into Penn and Post Police Department and want to do a personnel complaint, it's going to be the same as walking into the sheriff's office, the same when I walk into Hornell, the same when I walk into Canastillo, that across the county, we have a similar intake process, a similar investigation process, and a similar adjudication process. So in working with the other chiefs in the county, I think we can achieve this. So what we're going to try and do is standardize the manner in which all agencies in the county receive personnel complaints, document them, and investigate them, and try to standardize it across the county, and then use the information from those complaints, leverage our field training officers and say, do we have a trend here? Is there some way that we can better field train new officers to avoid these complaints? Is there something that we need to do in policy and procedure to better serve our citizens and avoid these complaints. So the goal is to not only standardize what we do and how we do it, but also use that information we gain to make our services better. And again, there's no real economic lift to that, but I think it shows huge benefits down the road for us.
So, how many personnel complaints do we get in the course of a year?
Probably about five or six, not many.
Just at the sheriff's office?
Yeah. Yeah. And different agencies get more depending on personnel.
Right.
Three or four or five, is that pretty much in the jail or is that?
No, it's on the road too. So-and-so was rude. I think so-and-so was rude to me. Okay. I just had one that I investigated based on a Facebook post of a member off duty. Sometimes they're serious ones. Sometimes people screw up. But most of them are, I felt disrespected and I felt like they didn't listen to me. That's the majority of them. So, and we can, you know, we can improve our service from that. So that's the plan on TA1. increased transparency. This was another one that was very loud. One of the primary feedbacks about policy and procedure were, we don't know what you do. So we don't know how to tell you to get better. And there's a transparency issue, not that people necessarily thought we were up to no good in hiding it, but they just want to understand what we do and they want to understand why we do what we do. So we broke that down into three areas. There's more than three. There's a couple more in there. We're going to start doing monthly reports. We'll put them both on the website and on our Facebook page where we say we handled this many calls for service, this many cases were investigated, this many arrests were made, and this many arrests of and show the demographics of race and sex in those arrests. In other words, it was whatever percentage of whatever demographic. And we'll put those out monthly. We'll also put out the number of area patrols and community interactions that we had per month in that report. And we'll deliver it to this committee also. So it'll go on the web page, on Facebook, and it'll be part of our monthly report to this committee. So, and again, we always request the local papers to report on what we do. We've got, I think, 17,500 followers on our Facebook page now. So we're kind of almost eclipsing what the papers cover with what we put out. So
years past, the papers used to cover most of this documentation.
Yeah.
Statistics. They don't do that anymore.
No, they don't. Well, you've got two papers that are run by the same company out of Utica with diminishing staff. So I think Jeff Smith is about it as far as field reporting for the Leader and Neil Simon for the Tribune. That's about it. So there's not a lot of content being written on these areas. Mm-hmm. Next slide, please. TA3, reduce personnel complaints. And again, we talked about that in using the field training officers to review all of our complaints, establish a standardized personnel complaint process. We talked about that and a countywide tracking system to identify training needs. I think part of this moving forward also is going to be a standardization of training throughout the county. In that I think one of the byproducts of this is you're going to see training groups emerge, multi-agency training groups emerge, where we're all kind of training very, very similarly across the county to meet these needs and to meet the identified areas, especially when you're talking about implicit bias, cultural diversity, and issues along that line. There's only so many choices out there, so we'll be sharing in those.
And also with that system, isn't Corning thinking about using the same reporting system that you have so that way information can be shared?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right now, Village Bath has the same records management system that we have at the sheriff's office, and we can search each other's database and share that info. The undersheriff has actually contacted all the chiefs And we're going to put together a committee of all the agencies to look at whether that's a good solution for everyone or if there's a different solution we should be moving towards. And we're also including the DA's office on that. So that committee's meeting after the first of the year, and we'll start looking at where we want to go as a collective group and how to pay for it if there is a change. Add annual report data fields. So one of the discussions with the city of Corning is how do we benchmark what we've achieved? And like an idiot, I offered to do it at the county level. So part of the annual report is going to be an update. It's an addendum. Our annual report, the one we send out with all the pretty pictures, it's going to have an addendum as to countywide achievements in the reform plan. So the agencies will submit them, we'll put the data together, and we'll put it out in a report. So you're not just seeing where we are on our plan, but every agency in the county. And then we'll share that with every agency and municipality in the county so that they can see it. And that way we'll be able to track where we're at with this. Annual report data fields also are going to do use of force, type and frequency, and personnel complaints and adjudications. And again, what we'll do is redact names and any personal information and just say we received 5 personnel complaints. One was this, one was this, one was this, one was this. This one resulted in corrective behavior. This one was unfounded, whatever the case may be. And if there's use of force, and again, we don't have a tremendous number of use of force reports either. The big difference between what we do and what the municipal police departments do is they're there in 2 minutes while they're still fighting. We're there in 10 minutes when they're tired out. So our use of forces are significantly less typically, but that's just a generalization. On to TA5. We're going to post on the website on the sheriff's tab and the job descriptions of all employee positions within the sheriff's office. People wanted to know what those were. They're public documents. We'll publish them on a tab on the website for people to look up. You know what the job description is of a deputy, a corporal, a sergeant, investigator, and a lieutenant, and also a copy of the blank appraisal. We do a yearly eval that's specific to the sheriff's office. It's different from the county one. We'll have a blank one of those on there. It's part of their contract, so it's already a public document in See-Through New York. Community relations, moving. Any questions on transparency and accountability before we move on to community relations? All righty. So we want to enhance, we do a Citizens Police Academy in person every other year, and we have been for the last 6 years. We're going to, again, partner with SUNY Alfred and Corning to develop an online version of that so it can reach more people. That was another thing was, well, why do you do use of force the way you do it? Why can't you shoot them in the leg? Why can't you do this? So we said, as a group, you know, they get all that in the Citizens Academy. They understand it then. They get to see it. How can we reach more people with that? Well, if we do an online version and partner with SUNY, it's a good way to do it. So that's the plan. We've already reached out to Alfred. They're very interested. And I've had initial conversations with some folks at Corning, and they're warming up to it. Provide videos and brochures. That was a lot of it, too, was, well, what are we supposed to do when we're stopped at a traffic stop? What should we do? So we're going to do videos and brochures to say, hey, turn on your overhead light, put your hands on the steering wheel and stay right there with your window rolled down. Things like that. What people should do during interchanges and with police so that they're the most safe. And also some how-tos, how to leverage your what services we offer, how to get services we don't offer, all of that stuff. 2-1-1, things like that. And to strengthen customer service practices, develop and conduct best practice communication trainings countywide. There was a lot of complaints about how people were treated by dispatchers. And this is at the city level and also the county level. And it's because they didn't understand the number of questions that are asked. People were frustrated that when they call for help, they have to answer a lot of questions. And so with the city specifically, we're going to do a customer service training for their dispatchers. I haven't yet talked to Tina or anyone at 911, but we would offer that and hope that they would partner with us in the same at the county level. But that's outside my purview. That's up to you guys. Develop and conduct professional development training on communications for supervisors. So currently we do a lot of professional development training for our supervisors. What we're talking about is how to conduct professional communications so that we increase the public confidence in the fact that our supervisors are going to investigate complaints and are going to be able to take care of their issues and help them. And I that's an ongoing thing that I think never stops. On to the next page. Team with citizen instructors. So we want to strengthen our community safety training programs. As you know, we do pistol permit safety course. We do proficiency courses, pistol proficiency. We do boater safety. We do driver safety. Our goal is to partner with some of the same educators in the community and have them come in and teach with us so that we strengthen not only the community ties, but the people that come to the classes see us working with the community to provide that safety training. So I've already reached out to some folks at the Bath Rod and Gun that are NRA instructors, and they're very excited to come in and teach with us. So we'll leverage that as we move forward. Promote joint safety presentations to community groups via social media, websites. Again, we do Citizens Response Active Shooter Event. We do Stop the Bleed. We're looking to leverage those into some online training so that we can reach more people in a safer way, especially right now. On to number four, establish and promote community programs to increase law enforcement visibility in the community. Deputy on site, this is something we've talked about for quite a time, and I want to get going where every town board has a deputy or corporal or sergeant or lieutenant assigned to it. And at least once every 3 months, they go to that town board meeting with a script and present on what's going on at the sheriff's office to update them. And I rotate through. I know many of you have seen me at your town board meetings. I'll rotate through those also, but I think they need to see that deputy as a liaison so that if they have an issue, they can call that deputy and know that it's going to get right back. So that's the first one we're going to do. The Stop and Talk program. This is more informal. What the feedback was is that we need ways where the citizens get a chance to interact with our folks without them being in uniform. Not to mean they're naked, but that they're dressed in civilian clothes. So that's what the Stop and Talk program is for. Dressed down versions of the deputies get to stop in and talk to schools or community groups or any of those areas where we can impact positively and positively impact the community's impression of the deputies as a community member, not as that guy that's coming to evict me or take away my guns. So we will come up with a plan for that. And again, with our training day on Thursday, it's a great opportunity for us to leverage that at little to no cost. Coffee with the sheriff. I do like coffee. I'm looking at a monthly social hour rotating around the county where if I'm in the Hornell area, I have Chief Murray there. If I'm in the Corning area, I have Chief Spaulding there. If I'm in the Bath area, I have Chief Mullen there. If it's in Canastillo, I have Chief Amidon there. And we just sit down and invite people to come in and chat. Completely informal. Just come on in. And I think of it in my mind kind of like Jerry darts every day. But
you spend all your time in
the I know. No disrespect to for the sheriff there. But I know that's something that I don't do. I don't go out to coffee with people much, but it's a way to get the community to see their sheriff and be able to chat with them and say, hey, I know that guy.
Sheriff, I'd just like to make a comment with you on your first one there, the deputy on site from like my town hall.
Yeah.
One thing that has changed over the years is when the state troopers or the sheriffs used to drop off the tickets.
Right.
Now they're all downloaded. So you know, the court clerks and the town clerks, they knew the sheriffs and state troopers on a first name basis because they were always dropping off the tickets.
Yeah.
So I think that that's one thing that's, you know, went away from downloading them. So they did, because I do know in our town, they used to like that interaction with.
Yeah, you get to put a face with a name and I know that guy. I can call that person if I need help. Yeah.
So they don't feel as nervous calling to check on a ticket or check on something.
Right. Yeah.
Sure, that's a good point. They'll be here sometime in the next month. I'll ask them when they're here.
Yeah. You
know, type thing.
Yep. And that's kind of my goal, is to have like an individual liaison with each town board so that they can be that go-to. Yeah. And we'll continue our Crease and Stop the Bleed countywide. Right now we've hit every school district, I believe, with Crease and Stop the Bleed. Test for promotions, but it's a personality assessment, skill level assessment to help us in our promotions and give us that other, another layer of validity in those that get promoted. So right now, for anybody that's a new hire off of a list, they do everything here. They complete the comprehensive background. They do a psychological exam and a polygraph before they're hired. However, if they're lateral coming in from another agency, we've accepted what the other agency had for their background because they're already off probation. We're going to expand that and do the same background for laterals as we do for new hires. Even though they're off probation at their agency, we're still going to go through all of those additional steps just so that we're clear across the board. To protect the county primarily, but also to make sure we're getting the best quality candidates we can. And then that's going to expand to promotion, the personality assessment by Dr. Supnick also. So number two, initiate anonymous quality assurance feedback channels. Already a lot of our citizens contact us via the anonymous tip line. Sometimes it's about officers and deputies. Typically it's about animal abuse and drugs, but not by the officers or deputies. But what we're going to do is encourage and maybe even set up another tip line for not just complaints, but also compliments on what they see the deputies and the officers doing, because I get far more compliments on their professionalism than I get complaints currently, but it'd be nice to get more. So we're going to set that up and establish a process for citizens to leverage social media and our website to anonymously notify us of unlawful behavior, personnel, or unsatisfactory. So again, we want to have that culture of let us know. Let us know so that we can correct it. Number three, New York State, we've been working on being accredited on the law enforcement side. Currently, we're accredited in the jail, in court security, and in civil division are all accredited. The law enforcement patrol division is not accredited. The primary hangup has been our evidence room. We would have to create a secondary level of security for firearms, drugs, and cash and high dollar items that doesn't exist in that room. In the budget this year, we put in $5,000 to do that. And that's our plan, is that she'll be sufficient and we'll move ahead. And we have this on quarter four of 2023. I expect to have it before then, but we'll have all divisions accredited across the board by then. That's our plan. That's the really only the single glaring issue we have to reaching accreditation with the road. Number four, there was a lot of talk. I'm page 18. There was a considerable amount of talk, not about getting rid of the SWAT team or getting rid of no-knock warrants. There was a lot of talk about understanding them. And in looking at some of the national issues that have occurred that have been catastrophic tragedies, a lot of that is by folks that aren't sufficiently trained doing those activities. So actually what our plan is to make sure that we opened up, and we've already done this. We're opening up our SWAT team, our CERT team, to the outside agencies. Currently, we have a member from Corning PD and a member from Canisteo PD in training with our SWAT members to become part of the team so that it's a true countywide team. And by doing so, that shifts the burden of outfitting them to those agencies. But it also allows us to have more members so that we can meet the minimum number to achieve accreditation through New York State. We have to have a 15-member team to get accredited by the state. So that allows us to move towards that number. 15. Yep. And again, typically our team is used for high-risk warrant entry, search and rescue, barricaded subjects. That's typically the bread and butter for our tactical team. And again, we've already seen how bad those situations, the barricaded suspect, can go not that long ago. So this is going to allow us to be safer and help the individual local agencies be safer and everybody in the county be safer. So I think it's a good move. Number five, improve collaboration with mental health. This is a toughie, because the big push is, and you guys all know what the budget's like for mental health and what the staffing is like for mental health. And what you may or may not know is the number of beds available in the mental health world in this area, virtually zero. We've got, so St. James closed their inpatient. Soldiers and Sailors in Penyan, I think, is down to one bed. Olean, last I heard, was down to, I think, four beds. Rochester is primarily assessment, not treatment. So we've got ERs with mental health patients in the ER for weeks because they can't find a bed for them. St. Joe's, which is now part of Arnett, they're not admitting many people. There's no beds. So in the mental health realm, we're going to work with Sabin County Mental Health, obviously, to continue to collaborate and promote the mobile crisis unit. But when it's someone that needs that inpatient care, we're at a roadblock. And we're going to continue to work with our partners in the mental health and in medical fields. But right now in this area, especially, there's just no beds to be had. So we're going to continue to work with them, and hopefully we'll be able to find some creative ways to find other beds, other places. We've already started in the addiction world, working with a company out of Pennsylvania, just over the border in Westfield, right, to send people there. Join, because the we're such shortage of beds.
We have one in Rochester. We're paying, I think, $100,000 a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
One patient.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's got to be a better way. And that's what the crisis intervention training, when it works right, leveraging the mobile crisis unit with our deputies, that is the whole purpose of that, is to get them in outpatient before they have to be an inpatient. There's some that are going to have to be an inpatient. It is what it is. But our plan is to collaborate. A lot of the talk was we want more mental health, you know, going to calls with police and where and how.
You know, is there any indication as why those beds have disappeared over the years?
Staffing cuts and liability. A lot of it is in the cost. It costs a lot of money to house somebody safely in a mental health unit. And, you know, St. James went under when they lost state funding. Soldiers and Sailors had a couple of liability issues. And as it continues to diminish, our options continue to diminish. So the only thing I think we can really invest in is better coordination with Steuben County Mental Health to get them into outpatient quicker with Steuben County Mental Health before it becomes crisis. And that's the purpose of the crisis intervention training. So we'll continue that. We've already got two deputies certified in that, and we'll continue to move forward with that.
Is there any way you could partner with the VA?
We can't because they're federal.
I know, but that's the answer?
Yeah. Yeah, they will only take veterans. That's the only people they'll treat. They don't have an emergency room anymore, so they don't take drop-ins. It's only when they're accepted into the program there when they'll take them in. So actually, if it's a veteran that's in crisis, they're going to go to a medical facility like IRA first, and then we'll work to get them a transfer into the VA is the way that works. So, or Corning or Cornell, whichever the case may be.
But even because of their federal status, they couldn't participate in our process. I had reached out and talked to someone there. Mm-hmm. They couldn't even participate.
Right. They couldn't even be stakeholders because we wanted them on the stakeholder group. And they said, nope. On to the next page. Improve awareness of mental health challenges of deputies and officers. This one came up quite a bit and it surprised me. People were very concerned about the mental health of the individual deputies and officers as they deal with all they deal with. And I agree with that. When 4 years ago, when the undersheriff and I came in, we immediately started a peer intervention program where we got six members, both deputies and correction officers, certified by the state as peer intervention counselors. And we've used them to great effect. But as they move on and get promoted, we need to continue that training and continue that going. It's to the point now where when something happens, it's not even a question if they're going to meet with a peer counselor. They know they have to, whether they want to or not. And it's completely anonymous, and it's somebody that they can talk to that understands the job. So that's been very, very advantageous for us. But we need more peer counselors, and we'll train those, and we'll get that done. Something that I've seen in my travels that other agencies do is they include the families of the deputies and the officers in emotional survival training. And I think it's very productive. The more I dig into this subject matter, the more I see people who have lost their career. And I see when they talk about the amount it's being completely high focused and intensely focused all day, and then you go home and you crash, and there's no plan, there's no workout, there's nothing to alleviate that, and then things start changing the way you look at the world. And I was reading the textbook on it, I'm seeing people in my mind that have lost their jobs and done foolish things because that's where they were. And what some of our partners in training do is, especially in the academy setting, is they say you have to bring in your spouse or your significant other so that we can explain what you're getting into. And we can talk about the danger signs you're going to see so that you can get your deputy or your officer help, and so that they can have a full career, not an abbreviated career.
Do you by any chance know if Brian Palmateer from TNR does that with his?
I don't.
Brian Crane used to do that when he owned cranes.
Yeah.
When they went out to a fatality, the tow truck drivers, you know, because they're right in on it.
Yeah.
He would make them go and meet with somebody after every fatality.
Yeah.
Just to make sure.
And we do that with our peer counselors, but also one of our mental health counselors in the jail is she's a professor at Alfred, and she has donated a lot of time to our folks to make sure they're okay afterwards. And there's a lot of areas to reach out to if you know where to look. But yeah, we do that as a routine, and I think it's time well invested. So we will continue that, and stress is the big deal. So we'll reach out. We're going to create a training program for the families also. On to training, any questions on operational policies and procedures? Moving on to training, expand the de-escalation training. Again, we do this currently online through Burma. We're going to try to find other presenters, other ways of conducting that in addition, and offer more training in that area. And again, partner with our other countywide agencies. Use of force training. So the state just redid their defensive tactics curriculum, and all of our instructors are updated on it. But the decision was made based on the feedback that we need to, again, create that countywide training group, a countywide training platform on not only use of force, but also de-escalation. And so that we're all, there's very few big calls that it's not at least three or four agencies responding. So let's all work on having a similar response so that we can work better together on those hot calls. So we're going to do benchmark and gather recommendations for improved use of force training, but also do an annual defensive training countywide so that everybody's on the same sheet of music in accordance with New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services. Next page. And this is our appendix. This kind of gives you a roadmap of everybody that we listen to in coming up with these recommendations. And again, it wasn't just the five of us sitting in a room going, well, I like this and I like that, and hey, let's do this. It was all of the folks you see listed on that sheet saying, you know what, in my experience, this is what's lacking. And we had both retired Judge Bradstreets and Furfer on the group. And, you know, we had addiction counselors. We had people across the board on it, business members, community members, non-for-profits.
Even Wegmans and Walmart managers.
Yes, yeah. Wegmans and Walmart managers were on.
Healthcare.
Yeah, healthcare professionals, school districts. Everybody we could think of that as a stakeholder, we had on there, and they came up with some good information, and we were able to leverage a lot of that into our plans. There were some things that just were completely not doable, and they don't make it into the plan, but by and large, a lot of what's in here is what we're already doing. It's just an expansion, and it's sharing it with the rest of the county. So.
Well, I think the plan is very comprehensive. People have done a great job.
Appreciate that.
Incorporate it, all the rest of the people in the house.
Appreciate that. It's
gone
been
a- to the legislature for approval, I'm assuming, in December.
Well, actually be in January, because we got to do our 2-week public comment.
Oh, yeah.
And then I'll come back to you with the final. And then that's when we'd be looking for the resolution from the legislature so that Jack can submit it.
We submit it to the state. So yes. Then the question is, this is a multi-year plan. Mm-hmm. Who's responsible for following the deliverable dates, and are we meeting them? And do we do continued reporting to the state on an annual basis, or haven't they said that yet?
There's nothing in the guidance to indicate what the state is expecting after the plan.
I would think that they would want an annual update.
And I think we should provide them with one, whether they require it or not.
Right.
And just to show that we are meeting our benchmarks and we are hitting our achievables. That's our plan. And like I say, the plan is to bring all the information in and submit one countywide update covering all the police departments. But I think, again, you know, this was the governor's, whether you consider it a lawful executive order or not, this gives us the opportunity to hold a mirror up and say, what are we doing well and what aren't we doing well? What do we need to do better? I think it's a fantastic thing. It's a pain in the butt, but it's a fantastic thing. And
well, this is part of the question is that who's pulling this together to track it? Is it the head of each law enforcement agency? Is kind of that designated person?
I think so. I think it's up to the municipality too. Okay. You know, I can think of at least one municipality where it'll probably be the mayor pulling it together, where other ones it may be the chief of police or the officer in charge. So, or maybe both.
Yeah. So that's something that they would really need to define.
Yes.
I think the fact that you got all of them to sign up to become part of the plan was huge. Because there's a lot of territorial nature to law enforcement, just like there is to fire service and ambulance and everything else. Yep. So.
Well, I think the fact that we were willing to do most of the heavy lifting helped.
You said you had 300 hours in time invested. Any idea on how many dollars you might have invested?
No, because it's been all my time. So it's
volunteer time.
Pretty much, yeah. So I think that that's part of being sheriff. You know, when I talk to deputies and they say, you know, geez, you should do a 4 10-hour day. I say, well, I'd love to have 4 10-hour days instead of 5 or 6, but it's part of the gig. And this is an important thing. And just like the way we're supporting public health right now, to me, that's the biggest thing in the public safety realm in this county right now. We'll support it 100%. And same thing with this, when I look at the amount of funding that could be lost to municipalities, that's a big deal. You lose your CHIP funding in Canastillo, you're hurting. And the same thing in Caton. So I don't want that to happen. I don't want that to happen. So if we have a way where we can avoid that, it's well worth the time. Well worth it.
I would commend you and just as I said, appreciate Corning's involvement. I think that was huge.
You can tell this isn't my normal report.
Oh, no, I've been through the process the Corning. I know what that was like. Yeah. But I wanted to say that the fact that you stepped up and took this and ran with it was important because I've talked to other chairmen at other counties.
Mm-hmm.
Their sheriffs weren't all that accepting of the responsibility.
Right.
And so it was the legislature that kind of pushed doing the plan. And we're not the ones that should have been doing the plan. We're not the experts at it. Well, so I appreciate that you guys did this.
Yeah, no worries. Thank you. Thank you for that. And we have shared this draft plan with the Sheriff's Association for any other county that wants to use it too. Yeah.
And I would just like to add, I think you guys should be really proud of your sheriff's office because in our surveys, we were able to separate out the responses of each police department, right? And we had a question that said, on a scale from 1 to 10, how satisfied are you with your police department? And the sheriff's office did extremely well there. They have very high ratings. And just throughout their questions, the consistency of a higher rating, it was evident. And I just think that's a testament to his professionalism and the men and women that work under him. And I just think you guys should be proud. I just wanted to point that out because I noticed when I looked at it.
So this is Hilda. Can I add a comment?
This is like the feedback session, Hilda.
I promise not to be long. What a great job our local police officers and sheriff's office have been doing. Since there's no big glaring issues or problems, and I think we are a model. Our process that we have here is a model for the rest of the state. And so good job, guys.
Carol? Thank you. Carol, did you have something?
I know you've done a lot of this work before you proceed to serve, but do you need manpower to finish this? I
mean, we always need manpower.
I mean, how are you going to finish this?
So a lot of it is set up to expand what we're already doing with the resources we have.
Okay.
It'll be tight, but we'll get it there. And again, the undersheriff does a tremendous amount also. He keeps the wheels on the bus. So yeah, there'll be some overtime associated with it, but I don't see a tremendous amount. I really don't.
But I think you're also leveraging other organizations.
I am.
Just like the colleges, you know, and those to help with this.
The partnerships. Yeah. And I think that's huge, hugely important to create those partnerships in this, because then it's not just the county's issue. It's everybody's issue. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Thanks, folks. We appreciate all that you've done, and I got to move on because I'm cutting into public works time now. So.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jim?
Yeah, I see that. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Sheriff.
Good morning. I have two items for you. First is the 2021 NMS Labs contract. They're making an adjustment to the fee schedule. These are just minor adjustments. For instance, the basic postmortem toxicology is going from 180 to 191. The extended postmortem toxicology panel has gone from 250 to 266. So it's very, very small increases. Should be covered in our regular budget for 2021.
Motion?
I'll move it.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
Okay, next item is the Twin Tiers Pathology. This is our medical examiners in Binghamton. They are increasing their fees as well for 2021 from $900 per autopsy to $950. So again, we have budgeted for these items. We should be fine as far as these increases go in the 2021 budget.
I'll move it.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. That's all I've got for you.
Tim, that issue.
Tim, I sat out there and I was reading the fire advisory board's minutes.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of problems are we having with the Motorola?
So we had an issue that we were chasing for quite a period of time over at the Jasper Tower site, where we had interference coming in. Our new radio technician, Randy Goodian, spent quite a bit of time over there monitoring that situation, was able to pick up the interference, and he was able to pick up an actual code within the interference that pinned it down to a paging company out of Pottsville, Pennsylvania. So we were able to contact them 2 weeks ago, get them out to look at their system, and they found a bad transmitter just over the border into Pennsylvania that was causing spurs that were coming into our system. That eliminated one problem. So the other problem that we have is when we key up the high band fire system, and we key up the high band EMS system at the same time, when we drop the fire system, the high band EMS system continues to stay open. This is a problem that Motorola's working on. We had technicians here this week. They were able to pinpoint it down to four locations where this is happening. They were able to pull copies of the code plugs of the receivers and transmitters from the various different tower sites, sent all of the various information that they were able to gather and collect to Motorola engineering, and they're working on it, trying to identify why the system's doing what it's doing. I'm anticipating that it's probably just something in programming that's causing this to happen, but we've got to find out where the difference is between one site to another and why these four sites are doing this. So we're working on it. The engineers are on it. We're just waiting for them to resolve this issue. Then we can move forward with the continued plan. So it's frustrating. I wanted this system on in February. We've been, you know, COVID has caused a lot of issues with this because we had issues with vendors that weren't able to travel to come to finish programming pieces of equipment. We were able to work through that remotely. You know, it's just been very frustrating, and I want it on just as much as everybody else wants it on. You know, I hear from the fire service, you know, we've been talking about this for 30 years. I've been in the fire service for 30 years, and I was one of the guys that was talking about this way back then. So I want to see it done. I'm going to get it done. And, you know, we'll work with Motorola to try to continue to move forward in the process.
Problems with Motorola even back into the 80s.
You know, the thing is, it's just so technical. I mean, there's just so many technical working parts to this system that, you know, it's hard to just pick out that one anomaly that's causing this to happen. So I'm confident they'll figure it out. We've got a lot of good people working on it. We'll get through it.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Brooks. Nice to see your smiling face again.
It's nice to be back. First of all, I want to comment on the two contracts Tim just talked about, NMS and the Twin Tiers Pathology. They've both been home runs for us. So Tim finding those folks to work with us has been great. We haven't used NMS much, so it's not really much of an issue. We're still using the state police primarily. But when we have, they can do things, particularly in critical cases, that the state police cannot. And the Twin Tiers Pathology has been such a dramatic upgrade from Monroe County. It's amazing. We're moving cases within a couple of weeks as opposed to 6-8 months a year, that kind of stuff. So they are phenomenal. So I want to thank Tim for pursuing those two avenues and moving us forward on those two fronts.
And MSS, that laboratory is what did the slam dunk in regards to the conviction of the homicide in Coring. Their process, which is the only one that they do, is what made their defense counsel say that got us with DNA. So it was very great lab.
So we had three issues we want to talk about today. Is that correct? One, we have a budget transfer. And I think we wanted to table that for the short run to deal with an issue. I need to speak with the county attorney about some issues we have about that. So we were going to meet with the county attorney and Jack and discuss that further. So I'm asking to table that until next month.
That's the major equipment change?
Yes, that's correct. It's just an issue I need to discuss with Jen and figure out if that's something we need to do or can do. And so we've been going back and forth by email, but I need to get her some more information and sit down and have a conversation with her and Jack before we do that. So we'd ask to table that to next month, please. As far as a diversion update, as far in our agreements, I'll defer to Noel because he's been quarterbacking that for us.
Currently, the diversion program
fees collected since the end of July are $433,000. The fees collected. This is going to have approximately $200,000 of fees that'll be applied to the general fund for next year. We'll be about $100,000 short of the goal that we had established in the budget with only approximately 5 months of the program being implemented. So I think that even though we did not meet the goals, I think that since we were able to go to the contracting service that we have, we've reduced a lot of unnecessary labor currently that we had staff members just overwhelmed in the process previously when we had diversion, and now we have a help desk. We refer to them quite a bit, and the service that Diversion Management Incorporated is providing is excellent. I defer a lot of things to them, and they're on it within 24 hours, 42 business days maximum. So also today, That's in regards to the fees collected. And also today, just I believe we need to get it on the record to approve the IMAs between the municipalities that will be entering into the IMAs. We have some. I do not have a total number of the ones that I've received. Unfortunately, some are coming into Tammy's office, and then I'm getting the interdepartmental mail, and some of them are being mailed directly to Jack or myself.
So, IMAs are what? These are the contracts with the municipalities?
This is the agreement with municipalities so we can give them funds back from traffic diversion. The way it works is that every town and village in which, or municipality in which a ticket occurs, gets sort of a piece of the pie here to help increase traffic safety, I think is the language we're utilizing here to fit with the statutes that apply. So we are entering into intermunicipal agreements that allow them to receive those funds from us, or from the county, essentially.
Just asked you a question about the 21 budget. What did you put in there for revenues for 2021?
I don't recall, quite frankly.
2020?
We didn't change it. We left it flat, so I believe it was $600,000.
Whatever we lost this year, we'll probably make up next year anyway.
I think so. And there's going to be, you know, with COVID and courts closing, the one thing that's still moving is tickets through diversion. So in real terms, it's been a godsend to us to be able to continue to move traffic cases through, continue to get folks some classes and get tickets resolved outside the court system. So it's been a very, and that will not slow down no matter what happens, which has been great. So we can be relatively sure that's what's going to continue to happen.
Just to add to that, in regards to the courts, I believe that there's a positive uptick with the courts in regards to this phase of diversion because of the help desk and because of obviously the current COVID situation. I asked for authorization for certain tickets over certain speeds through the courts, and most of the courts have been gracious to let the applicants participate simply because they've already paid a fee and they've already entered into an agreement to take class. So I think that there's I think we have more positives than negatives in regards coming from the courts in regards to the program and as we move forward with this.
And I think as a caveat, always looking to eliminate the scoff law process. I think you've all seen that on a lot of, there's been newscasts about it. There's legislation out there, which means that we couldn't suspend licenses for unpaid fines and that kind of thing. So I think one way to keep our courts relatively clean is to continue pushing tickets into this program, which will make it more and more important over time, because with no teeth in the scoff law process, it's having an upside. We'll get people to pay their fines and move the ball forward. So I think it'll become more and more valuable to us countywide as time goes by.
I think you'll get the rest of those back in the next week or so, because when we actually got that intermunicipal agreement, like ours came the day after our November board meeting. So I think this week here, you'll see a lot of the board meetings fall and you'll get those back.
Yeah, I think we have about currently, I want to say 20% of the municipalities have submitted applications back, because I caught them just in time. And I've had a lot of email correspondence from municipalities. Well, we just had our meeting. And so.
We are
moving forward.
Finally,
positively.
Motion to
execute the intermunicipal agreement.
Okay, I'll make the motion.
Second.
Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried.
And you were looking for a general update from the office. That's kind of a tall order. I could spend almost as much time as the sheriff was here talking about that, but I'll give you a quick thumbnail. We've been getting beaten up by COVID so far. Right now, I've got three of my core staff, clerical staff, who are currently quarantined. I've got one ADA down and one pending testing. So, you know, our folks are out there with the public on a regular basis, and we're sort of facing this pretty regularly. We did put some more internal controls in the office. Our folks wear masks in the office, that kind of thing. But we're going to face that as time goes on. Caseload wise, it's not going down. Bail reform has killed us. We are seeing more and more and more charges against the same people because we can't hold folks in jail. Our indictment numbers, we've been running two grand juries for the past since we went back with grand jury. So that means we're doing either 2 or 3 days of grand jury each week. And we're going to be close to 400 indictments this year, maybe a little bit more. That doesn't represent the total number of defendants. So our numbers, even though we didn't do grand jury for several months, indictment wise, will be essentially what they were last year. To put that kind of in context, I was part of an email I'm not sure I was supposed to get from Judge Roach complaining about the number of indictments we have. Last year, I think they're doing total cases, which is bigger than our numbers. We may have one indictment with five people in it. So he's breaking it back down. We ran 600 and some odd indictments last year. In context, pure indictment numbers, that matches a total for Ontario, Livingston, and Yates, I think, combined. So we are running a lot of cases here. A lot of it has to do with drug stuff, which I think is a function of the success of our drug unit, not the nature of our drug problem, because I think our communities are certainly safer than those communities. But I think it's something we need to look towards in the future when we get the facilities up and running. We've been in line for a fourth county court judge for a long time. That may be something we need to address from this group and from the legislature to push that to happening. That would be a state cost, and we'll talk about later on, but that's something that has been in the offing. I think it's very, very necessary long run. We are having a hard time closing cases right now because our courts are closed. We have no trials. We did one trial and that netted the entire clerk's office being out with a COVID quarantine. We lost one ADA and two of our three county court judges' offices went down. So we are not doing jury trials. A lot of folks are not pleading because of that, because with no trial in the offing, there's really nothing to push them, no way to put their feet to the fire and move a case forward. That's why we're pushing cases into grand jury to get them into the system. And we can do things like motions and even some of our hearings right now virtually, that's allowed. So we want to keep our cases moving as best we can. Local courts are basically shut down to everything but arraignment as of the last order. Right now, we don't know when that's going to reopen. Some of our local courts are up and running. It's sort of how you read the order, and our judges are reading it differently across the county. So our ADAs are going to court when asked. Otherwise, they're doing virtual work in local courts. County court, we are still having full days of county court virtually with our three judges. And grand jury will continue until January, and I'm not sure what's going to happen after that. So that's kind of the general state of the office. We are kind of in flux. Our discovery unit has kept up with the process completely, which has been phenomenal. Law enforcement is still getting us information. We have had our discovery unit working remotely just because, one, we don't have office space with the construction plan going on. And two, it seems to be very, very productive. And they are keeping up, which is we're getting no complaints. In fact, we're getting compliments from the defense bar. They're getting more stuff than they want sometimes and faster than they want it. So I think that's going very, very well.
I just want to add that the district attorney's drug initiative in conjunction with the municipalities that have a major role in that drug initiative, we've still been working our tails off. We could recover two stolen handguns just a few weeks ago out of Hornell. And the drug activity is really, it slowed down for, I want to say like maybe 6 weeks. And then it, you know, like, 6 weeks after COVID hit hard, and then it picked right back up. So we're still pushing hard with those. And to just reiterate what the district attorney says, you know, we're getting people that are, that, you know, we've indicted and they've been kicked loose and they're still back out there selling. And we've got things, you know, kind of in the bullpen waiting for them, you know, on other stuff. So we're recycling them people that are getting kicked out because of the bail reform.
And I would expect if there's another round of stimulus checks, we'll have another round of drug stimulus as well. It is phenomenal for the drug trade. So, unfortunately.
Is there any update on the virtual cap?
We have put together a training program. I worked with Pam Iani, and she has met with the judges and has put together a model training program, which we have turned up to Shannon Perro, who's sort of our representative from CAP, and we're kind of waiting to hear back. When they closed the courts, I petitioned our judges to say, look, you know, we are shutting off everything. Why are we continuing to do any live CAP? And we're sort of going back and forth on that. I've spoken with Judge Doran, and I'm sort of playing phone and email tag with Judge Moran, who's a Supreme Court judge who's assigned to this program. So I think we are moving forward. We've done what we are supposed to do. We are waiting for them to approve what they will allow us to do. Okay. And now we're also sort of waiting for the shutdown piece, because that may play into this, that force the hand back to the program that we have.
It's one thing you might want to know too. I don't know if you knew, but to add fuel to that is last night at like 4 o'clock, the judge called the sheriff's office and said, I'm positive for COVID. I can't come do CAP. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they were virtual, they could have sat home and done it on there.
Well, and that's what my primary CAP court ADA is Anna Cecil, and she's waiting for her COVID test right now because she found out she was exposed over the weekend and has symptoms. So
where she could still do CAP.
Where she could still do CAP, and that would keep the ball rolling. And that's Amanda Chafee was quarantined for 2 weeks after her trial. She was still able to do her full court load with Judge Roach because that's all virtual. So she, even though quarantined, she was able to keep working and didn't slow things down. And that's you know, the paralegal who's currently quarantined is still working full time because she works virtually or can work virtually with some of the things that Noel and IT have put together for us. So we're able to work virtually now in a way we never could before. IT's been phenomenal. And I got to give Noel a lot of credit because he's the one this has fallen on, because I have no idea. If I can turn my computer on, I'm having a good day. So
when we did this alignment for new court facilities here, wasn't it the plan to put a new courtroom in so we'd have four courtrooms rather than three?
That's my understanding. And we've been
about another judge being assigned here.
Okay. Well, to put it in context, I've been in the DA's office now 26 years. When I started 26 years ago, there were three full-timers in the DA's office, and there was no full-time public defender's office, either on the family court side or on the criminal side. And now I've got, seven full-time ADAs and myself. The public defender's office is equally sized, and they've got a family court size as well. Our case numbers are dramatically larger, and we still have the same three judges we had 26 years ago. So we're just hopelessly bogged down, both on the criminal court and family court side. We need a fourth judge, and there's going to need to be some push from this body at some point. But that's something that we have to work on in the offing. But once we have the facilities, we can do it. We can't do it right now.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Jack, do you have anything?
No, nothing from me.
Okay. Motion to adjourn.
Motion.
So moved.
Second.
Favor?
Aye.
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 Oh. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. They were a gift from my daughter, and I told her I would wear them.
Hello.
An excuse.
And I'm texting with Vince to tell him he's up.
I wear them once in a while. I usually wear them in front of the grand jury. They like them, so.